Welcome to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast. My name is Dr. Andrew Trusetta from NHS Somerset, and I'm joined by my friend and colleague,
Dr. Peter Bagshaw, GP and NHS Somerset Clinical Lead for Mental Health.
And we're really pleased to welcome today Christine Young, another colleague from NHS Somerset. And Christine, you're going to be talking about sustainability in healthcare, which is your area of expertise, I believe. So, a very warm welcome, Christine, and please tell us about yourself. Tell us your backstory. What have you done in life, and what's brought you to this point, and what's your interests and passions?
Oh, thank you. So I'm sustainability manager at NHS Somerset ICB. I've been in post for nearly a year now. Prior to that, I was in the primary care contracts team, and my background is procurement and contracts. Through that work, I've really been able to drive sustainability improvements through contract levers, and my passion really for sustainability has grown from there. I think the catalyst would have to be, and I think everyone has a catalyst of, you know, when they become more connected and more in tune with what's happening, the effects of climate change. And my catalyst was having my daughter. So she is 11 years old now, nearly 12. And I really wanted to work and do something meaningful to support the environment and protect the environment so that she can enjoy it as she grows up too. So, yeah, that's what's led me here.
Christine, can I start off with the basics? So sustainability is one of those words that's bandied around a lot, but it can mean different things to different people, can't it? What do you understand by sustainability? What's your main focus?
Yes, so in my role, the main focus is really the net zero targets. And I think net zero can sound really quite ambiguous. Some people aren't really sure what it means, but basically, you know, essentially what it means is that we, the amount of greenhouse gases that the UK adds to the atmosphere is no longer more than what we take out of the atmosphere. So that's the sort of main target. But in the NHS, there are two targets, net zero by 2040 for all of the emissions we control. Scope one and two is how they're described. And then net zero by 2045 for all of the emissions outside of our control. So that's scope three, and that's around supply chain and transport, staff travel, that kind of thing. So sustainability for me really feels like all of those key areas that feed into that net zero plan, the green plan that we have published as an ICB. All of those key areas of work that supports that a direction of travel to net zero is how I encompass it.
And for people who aren't familiar with the term ICB, that's Integrated Care Board, which is the successor to the clinical commissioning groups. And it's about commissioning services, basically, isn't it? And allowing services to happen. So sustainability, it's odd in my time in the NHS. I think I see a lot more waste and things thrown away because we've moved to disposable products because of fears of infection control and things like that. So it feels as though we've gone in the opposite direction. What do you see as the main ways that we can get back to net zero?
And so I think it's about thinking about all of the different areas, really. And so as part of my role, I've got sort of seven key areas of work: travel and transport, procurement and supply chain, estates and facilities, alternative models of care that incorporate wider determinants of health, digital delivery, medicines management and adaptation. So scope's quite broad, but I think to think about net zero and to think about achieving that target, it's thinking about changes we can make, some small, some big, changes that we can make to sort of drive that direction of travel. And you're right, I think post-COVID, single-use plastic gloves are more widely used. I think there's more uncertainty and nervousness around when to wear the gloves. And that's certainly something that we're looking at. We're doing a quality improvement project within the ICB, and apologies for the acronyms. I always said when I joined the NHS, I wouldn't get sucked into all of those acronyms, and then you just find yourself doing it. But within the integrated care system, the ICS, we're working on a quality improvement program along with our primary care colleagues and community hospital colleagues, colleagues at the council and at Somerset Foundation Trust on a hand hygiene campaign. It's Hand Hygiene Day on the 5th of May. And we're going to use that campaign to encourage people to be more confident when they need to wear gloves and when they can just wash their hands and more thoroughly and you know, reduce the use that way. So I think it's about just thinking about things that we're doing every day and things perhaps we could change.
Christine, so great that you're on the case, but it sounds like a huge potential task. Where can we start? Where's the best place to start? Are there any quick wins, or is it more gently, where we've actually got to change culture and the way everybody thinks? Be interested in your thoughts.
Yes, it's definitely changing culture, absolutely. And a big part of my role is engagement and trying to socialise the Green Plan and speaking to colleagues and presenting at various events just to try and, socialise the Green Plan. But I think sometimes that net zero target and, you know, all that we hear in the news and media, it feels possibly overwhelming. Where do you start? And I think there are quick wins. I think there are bigger scale things, but small changes can lead to more impactful change. I think... when I think about travel and transport, I think about, and I encourage friends and family and colleagues to think about, do you really need to take the car? I mean, in Somerset, we do have the challenge around rurality, but we have got some good public transport links. Some aren't so good, but I always think about, do I need to take the car? When is it actually needed? Could I walk there? Could I cycle there? You know, and encouraging people to do things like that. So there's small changes like that, but there's also changes around perhaps eating meat one day less a week, or just smaller things. You know, recycling waste obviously is another thing. It's a small part, but can lead to big change. Thinking about medicines management, for example, that's a really big part of our contribution to waste in the NHS, and thinking about whether the antibiotics are really needed. Is there anything else that might help? Is it, you know, being out in nature? I think I'm such an advocate for being out in nature and just the health benefits that can bring, and thinking about perhaps, you know, our reliance on things maybe we don't need, and small change can really grow from there.
And do you know what the big ticket items are in the NHS? You've mentioned things that we can do to be more sustainable, and I think we'd all go along with those. But thinking about the NHS, you've mentioned transport, which must be a big issue, buildings, heating buildings, waste through plastics, waste through medicines. What are the top priorities in terms of trying to make an improvement?
I think the real big hitters are travel and transport. I think, even staff travel, traveling to our sites. I mean, the NHS contributes 4.6% of emissions in the overall total emissions, UK emissions profile. So it's enormous. A lot of that sits in travel and transport. Yes, estates and facilities. So we're looking at rationalising our estate. I'm part of the One Public Estate group, so we meet across our integrated care system partners. We all meet to discuss better use of buildings, perhaps, you know, not using the, you know, selling off, or, you know, not using the buildings where we don't use the buildings, not heating them, not, you know, lighting them, you know, all that kind of thing, really. I think but another real key area is procurement and supply chain, and it goes much wider really with supply chain. It sits in that scope three. So all the statistics, I don't like to hit too many statistics, but 63% of our carbon emissions actually sit in scope three, and a lot of that is in supply chain. So procurement and supply chain is a real key area.
Interesting. Coming back to the medications, certainly some medications are more harmful to the environment, some anesthetic gases, for instance, and I think there's been certain ones have been phased out. And certainly when we think about asthma and COPD, there are two types of delivery of the medication or the drug to the lung surface. One is dry powder inhalers and the other is metered dose inhalers. And the metered dose inhalers, some people have to have them because they haven't got enough airflow, but they produce much more greenhouse gases. So NHS Somerset's been moving that way, and prescribers and GPs and others moving that way. And other things such as waste, for instance, certain pessaries for menopause, certain brands come with a new applicator for every dose, and other brands come with one applicator for 28 doses. And that's an awful lot of plastic that's being saved from being thrown away. And plastic, of course, comes originally from an oil well. So it's producing carbon production and having to take a precious reserve out of the earth. So there's quite a bit on the medications. What are the, just a sort of, can we just go back to a slightly perhaps odd question or unusual question? What are the benefits of net zero, and how does carbon affect the climate crisis?
So the benefits of being net zero, I think, you know, climate change, we're in a climate emergency, and I think that when it used to feel so far away, it used to feel that, perhaps it's happening in other parts of the world, but we're not directly impacted. But I think, you know, certainly over recent years, we've really seen that impact, with wildfires and hot summers, particularly across Europe, intensive heat waves, flooding, and all of those things create health impacts as well. So when the temperature stays at a really high level, your body can't cool down. It doesn't, especially if it's really warm at night, your body can't cool down. It can't recover from the heat. And and people really suffer, with all sorts of health implications as a result of that. And I think the hotter the planet becomes, the more we'll see that, those kinds of illnesses, really, those people suffering. So I think, it's impacting all of us. And when we see, again, about flooding, there's been so much of it in the news recently. Over Christmas time, the lead up to Christmas, in Somerset, there's lots of road closures. And, and I think that adds to climate anxiety. Those people that are impacted, it's really difficult to rebuild their lives, only to be flooded again a couple of months later. And it's something that we're seeing so much more frequently. And I think, people often get confused perhaps with weather and climate change. And and often people will say to me, it's always hot in the summer, or it's always cold in the winter, or we always get a lot of rain, something like that. But it's the intensity of it. In parts of Somerset last May, they saw a year's rainfall, in a matter of hours. And it's the intensity of it. And I think that's what we're really seeing and really starting to feel the effects of.
That's really helpful. And you've given some examples as to how the climate issue actually becomes a health emergency at times for people in multiple ways. So the more that we can have a sustainable lifestyle and the more we look at health, the better. Can I pick up on a slightly different topic that you were mentioning earlier, which was nature connectedness? Now, what do you mean by that? And what are the benefits of nature connectedness?
Yeah, so this is something I'm really passionate about. And in my role, it's the conversations I enjoy the most. So talking about nature connectedness. And so it's about being out in nature. It's about noticing the nature around you. And and thinking about how you're feeling when you're out in nature. I think there's so many studies to support this, really, but you know, the calmness, the sort of self-awareness, you know, the comfort that it seems to bring. And as I said, when the catalyst for me to be really interested in sustainability was with the arrival of my daughter. And I noticed, you know, I was so much more connected to nature when she arrived. I liked to be out in all seasons, and I wanted her to notice all of the seasons too. And I think it's really important for children to be out in nature and enjoy growing up in nature. I think if they appreciate it too, just from a very young age, they'll want to protect it too. And you know, we've seen such enormous loss of our wildflower meadows. 97% of loss of wildflower meadows since the 1950s. And to think that, you know, things we've enjoyed as we've been growing up may not be around for our children or our children's children. I feel like that, gosh, wouldn't that just be such a, you know, such a disaster? That would be such a, yeah, such an enormous, yeah, pity for all of those young people. But I think nature connectedness can bring such health and well-being benefits. I think they're definitely connected. I think if you're part of a community group, or you're part of a growing group, or you have an allotment, or you go on dog walks and meet the same people and the same dogs when you're out on the dog walks, that social interaction. But then noticing the sounds of the birds and the changings of the seasons, I think, you know, it really brings such health and well-being benefits. It really, really does support that.
And a lot of these are very direct health benefits, aren't they? I remember a study a while back where people recovering from an operation, if they could see trees out of their hospital window, they had lower rates of infection, recover more quickly with fewer complications. They're sort of quite direct physical benefits. Is that built into the design of hospitals, for instance?
That's interesting, actually, Peter, because it's something we think about and talk about quite a lot in our estates groups as part of adaptation planning. So planning for a future of climate change, because trees provide natural cooling systems for buildings and are enormously important. But there are Southmead Hospital, actually, in Bristol, has a wonderful site. It's absolutely brilliant. They've got growing walls. They've got wildflower meadows. They've got a kitchen garden area. It's wonderful. But I think some hospitals weren't built that way. They're, you know, in quite an industrial location on a busy main road, not surrounded by any nature at all. And I think, yeah, there definitely are health benefits to patients when they're in recovery, to be able to see that nature. Yes, absolutely. But I don't think enough of our hospitals have it. But I think it could really benefit our adaptation planning as we look to the future of climate change.
It's interesting. I'm so glad you've mentioned the trees, but flowers are important as well. And of course, when I were a lad, people used to take flowers to their loved ones in hospital, but infection control or something stopped that. So it's quite difficult to have any living living aspects of nature. But images, if they're allowed on the walls, could be very helpful in lifting morale and giving people some level of connectedness. And you mentioned busy town centres. Many years ago, forgive me, listeners, for indulging myself, but many years ago I was a houseman at Yeovil Hospital, some 40 years ago, and there was a Christmas show, and Steve, the mortician, who had a terribly deep voice, was the narrator in the Christmas show, and said, "Once upon a time, there was a..." So this was Yeovil Hospital. "Once upon a time, there was a small but happy district general hospital, cleverly situated next to a hideously dangerous roundabout." Which is a fair description if anybody knows Yeovil Hospital of how it is. Road improvements have happened since then. So
I can just add in a bit of science to sort of take us back to that. David has kindly put in the chat here about the direct effects of plants. So things called phytoncides that improve the human immune system by increasing killer cell activities and seem to be helpful in cancer and infection and things like that. So more and more, I think we're discovering this isn't just a nice fluffy idea. There's this direct scientific link between connection with nature and plants and good health. And should this be higher up our agenda on the NHS? It's something that, apart from yourself, Christine, I've not heard talked about much in my discussions around planning for health services.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, actually, Peter. I think social prescribing, green prescribing, it should be more widely used. We do have a good offer across Somerset, but it's quite fragmented. There's different kinds of offers in different places, and it does seem that the culture, a bit controversial, but perhaps the culture is more about relying on medicines and just prescribing medicines rather than, and I obviously GPs are really pressed for time and it's difficult to spend much time with a patient and perhaps, for an immediate sort of, fix for the patient. And the patient's also expecting those tablets as well, rather than, if they were introduced to something else that might be helpful, something else that would really help their health and well-being. But I think the culture and just the way things are is that a lot of the time it's about the medicines as the fix, and pharmaceutical companies are very happy with it that way too, I think, but yeah, we definitely need to shift that behavior.
Absolutely. And again, it's not a minimal thing. I read a study earlier this week, actually, just published, showing that exercise in nature is more effective than a standard antidepressant for all types of depression. So, these can be major things. You mentioned social prescribing, which again is one of those phrases a lot of us have heard about and don't know exactly what it involves. Can you tell us a bit about that, and how do people get a social prescription from their doctor, please?
Yes, and that's really good question, actually, because again, it's quite a fragmented offer across Somerset. So our colleagues in Frome are doing absolutely brilliant work. They're real pioneers, I think, in Somerset, and do so much great work that I'd love to replicate across the rest of the county. But they have their Health Connections website, Health Connections Mendip website, that is a directory really of different services that are available. SASP as well, now their acronym,
Activity and Sport Partnership.
That's it. Yes, thank you, Andrew. So that SASP have got lots of different activities that are available as well, lots of different ways that you can access different activities and groups, walking groups, things like that are happening. There isn't perhaps a direct referral through your GP. It's quite difficult at the moment. Some practices have social prescribers that work as part of their team, and so then the offer is much more available and much easier to access, but not all practices have that, and that's certainly something that we're looking at as an ICB, to restore that equity, really, equity of access, because it's so important that people are aware of what services there are available. And I've read a number of different local studies that people aren't aware of what's available and how to access it. And I think that's a really huge barrier. I think as well, because we have some village agents at the council, they commission that service, and so they have some services that they would refer people to, and some practices have their social prescribing team, and they have different services, and so it's really about a cohesive offer that we need. But it's a really positive way that we need to move forward, and as I say, some areas of Somerset are doing it brilliantly, like in Frome with their Health Connections website. So that's our goal, really, to replicate that.
It is a challenge, isn't it, to help us all change our behaviour, because most of us are just a teensy-weensy little bit lazy at times. And I also always used to congratulate people who'd moved to Chard, where I was working, as new patients. I said, well, you've come to a really great place. We're surrounded by nature and we're on a hill, so you can't do anything. You only have to step outside your front door and you're going to get exercise, either walking up and down the hill or up Sloan Hill or elsewhere. And a prescription I never actually suggested to anyone, but I would certainly do so now, if it was August, would be pick some blackberries, because I think nature connectedness is so important, and so many of us have actually lost the connection in our minds between nature providing us food. And I would just encourage everyone to pick blackberries in July and August, and when they're ripe, because they're just such delicious ones and they're easily recognisable.
Yes, that's something my daughter and I love to do. We love to go blackberry picking. It is really nice. And yeah, it is a great way of connecting to nature, definitely. And I think, yeah, there are so many things, like, you know, even just connecting to different groups that are happening around, you know, and walking groups or growing groups, or, you know, just perhaps for that community connection as well, you know, that really supports better health and well-being too. But yeah, it's sort of knowing what's there, really recognizing what's there and how to access it.
And for people who are interested, we did a podcast, didn't we, on foraging, Andrew, a while back, that people can access if they're interested in that. But we're sadly running out of time, Christine. It's flown by. Can we end with you just saying a little bit about some of the things that you feel you've achieved in Somerset to make it more sustainable, and what top tips you'd give to people to try and make their life more sustainable?
I think some of the things we've achieved in Somerset, we are actually working on a digital project at the moment where we're looking at social value in our procurement, which feels like a really brilliant achievement, something really positive. And we're also looking at climate adaptation as part of that digital project. So that's really great. I think our primary care colleagues are doing brilliant work with the Green Impact for Health toolkit. So each of the practices have a toolkit that they can access that just encourages better sustainable behaviour for each of the practices and different small changes they can make, things like that. I think our meds management offer as well, we've been doing some absolutely brilliant work. Our practices have been moving over to the dry powder inhalers, from the metered dose inhalers, and we've seen some really great shifts there, and some really really, you know, great numbers, really, which is so positive. And I think as well, you know, I think there are so many people that are passionate about sustainability, passionate about making a change. And that's what I absolutely love about this job, is having those great conversations with people that are so engaged and really want to work together to drive that change. And I think if I was to give any sort of tips, I think it's just think about small changes you can make. Think about going for a walk at the weekend, being out in nature, even like a seaside walk on a wintry day, it's lovely. But I think as well, you know, about not taking the car. Just think about, perhaps, you know, if there's a journey that, you know, perhaps you could get a bus, you could walk it, then I'd really urge you to do so, even if it's just one day a week, not every day. You know, just those small changes can lead to really something really, yeah, really impactful and really big.
I think that's really good advice. And you mentioned climate anxiety, and a lot of people do feel very anxious and overwhelmed and as though there's nothing they can do. But just making those small steps in our everyday life, I think is a way to combat that. So that great advice. Any last words from you, Andrew?
Just to thank Christine very much for everything you're doing and for coming along and sharing with us. And just to wish everybody well. Go well, everybody. And last words from Peter and Christine.
Perhaps I should say, go well on foot or by bike in nature.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Thank you both for your time. It's been great to be here today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast. The show was hosted by our team of doctors, including Dr. Andrew Tresidder, Dr. Peter Bagshaw, and Dr. Sarah Coop. The show was produced by Rob Huns Music on behalf of the NHS Somerset Integrated Care Board.